Hi there, fans. You know who you are. You're the reason we watched this. If I'm being honest, we would have watched it eventually, but you're the reason we watched it now. I could say thank you, but I won't. I could say thank you, but I can't. I would say thank you, but I stopped because what I want to say is thanks for being a fan. And also thank you. We would have watched it eventually, but instead we watched it now. Music.
I want to be hanged and burnt over a basket of living cats.
Pictures podcast, we're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
It's Bob.
And Erica.
It's Roy.
And welcome to February 2. That is where we go to you, the fans. We find out what you want us to watch. And we are ending the month yet again with another New World Classic. We talked about Avenging Angel last week, and now we're going to be talking about a movie that you either love or hate, and in between, there's no one. We're guessing, but joining us is a very special guest. He is a returning guest. He is also the host of The Disconnected. He's also our boss. He's the head of the Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network, so he's here, I'm guessing, to do have a good time, talk about a movie, but also give us our yearly reviews. Ryan Vero, welcome back.
It's Bop.
Ryan, welcome back to the show. We know you are incredibly busy doing a million things, so much stuff that I don't know how you do it. You make us all feel ashamed that we have not filled every hour with stuff. How is everything going with Disconnected and Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network? Are we still on it?
At the moment, last I checked, yes, we are here for your annual audit. So we'll find out at the end of the show. But so far, so good. Okay. You remembered my name, first check mark on the page. Okay. Wanted to say thank you for. I know last time after I was here, you talked about some dicey things with Mark, and maybe he was maybe not going to make the cut. But so far, so good. Seems like he's still here, so that's great. Erica, I just want to say all of the music, top notch. You're always amazing. No notes. Thank you.
Thanks, boss.
Wow.
I'm still. Just so you know, Ryan, I'm still on a PIP, so I'm hoping by the end of this month I'll find out whether I get to stay or not.
Yeah. That PIP could get extended, Mark, so let's not, just keep working.
I'm trying so hard.
But Ryan, before we get into the episode, we also want to talk to you about your latest venture, because you've been going around talking to people, going on a podcast, talking about this. Antenna Releasing, tell us about it. It's such an exciting adventure, and we are so thrilled that you're doing this. It's so exciting. Can you tell us about it?
I can. Me and my buddies, Mr. Billy Ray Bruton and the filmmaker Francis Galupi, have launched a film distribution company, and we are out making the rounds right now talking about our first acquisition, which is a documentary called Stolen Kingdom, which is about urban explorers going to Disney World and running amok, and that gets crossed with, of course, Disney fandom, and by the end of it, the police get involved, and it turns into a true crime story because an animatronic worth almost $500,000 mysteriously gets stolen from Epcot. And it is truly an incredible documentary. Please check it out when it comes to a city near you, playing in L.A. in February, and some other stops coming out soon. So everybody should get a chance to see that eventually. It's really great. We got a lot of stuff in the works. I'm beyond, like, still confused how they're letting me do this. But yeah, lots of other titles to announce soon, because I seemingly don't sleep, like you said, and far too busy. It's weird. I don't know. I'm still not used to this. Hi, I'm here.
It's so exciting. It's so exciting, Ryan. And what's also exciting is you're going to be putting out, like, not just new movies, but you're putting out other films as well, right? Like, you're going to be...
Yes. Not just new movies, the other kind. Old movies, too. Thanks. Yes.
The other kind.
And that's it. There's either new or old. That's it.
That's all. Yep.
That's all that exists.
New movies / old movies, and there's nothing in between. That's
love it.
Yeah,
love it.
Yeah, catalog titles as well. Lots that we're gonna be able to talk about. Hoping to do a lot more film restoration work, so I can feel like I'm actually doing something positive in the world, other than helping your guys' words get out to the earth.
Yeah,
so,
and you're also gonna be doing physical media as well, right? Like this. So this is not just film distribution, but also physical media as well.
It is film distribution in every possible avenue. So we are doing theatrical VOD streaming and eventually physical media, and trying to make smart choices for what needs to go in what direction, because not every film is going to get a physical media release, but most of them should.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the documentary sounds so interesting. I know you're also doing something very interesting with the filmmakers and the way that you guys split the revenues. So that's sort of...
Yeah, we're keeping all of it. Yeah.
Oh, is like the old model. Oh, I thought it was.
Oh, right. Wait! I got confused. I thought I got hired by a studio. Yeah, I mean, the big thing is everybody that is involved in the company is somebody that's been screwed over by somebody in the past, basically, which is like a humanity. So all of us, and we're just trying to do the right thing. And it's sad that that's innovative, but it's literally just, hey, let's not be assholes. And everybody went, whoa, great idea. And seemingly, it's made a reputation already. I mean, literally, at the day we're recording this, it's been 2 weeks and one day since we've launched this. I've already had about 8 things happen since that day that I'm like, wait, how is this happening already? And I can't wait to not be recording, and I can tell you about some of them. But it's truly astonishing.
That is amazing. We're so excited for you, and excited for, you know, the world to see all these movies and to see what you guys have working on. We're excited about it, but we're also here to talk about an old movie.
The other kind of movies. We're going to talk about the other kind.
Right, the new movies, right. And then there's the old movies.
Mm-hmm. And I was just stoked when you showed me the list. It was just a few new movies and then The Boys Next Door, and that was it. Those were the two kinds.
That's right. So tonight we are gathered together to talk about 1985's The Boys Next Door.
Nearly all these murderers are white males, many of them handsome, charismatic, intelligent.
This is the story of a couple of all-American kids, Roy Alston and Bo Richards. They're young, they're clean-cut, and like most kids, they want to do something spectacular.
So what do you want us to do, huh, Roy? Become computer programmers, maybe fly the space shuttle?
You seem like a regular kind of guy, you know, normal, kind of quiet. He just didn't seem like the kind of guy that would kill anyone.
But Roy and Bo are different.
Sorry.
They're trapped.
Walk in there Monday. We're on the drill press the rest of our lives.
And they don't fit in.
Look who's here.
What happens when there's no way out?
We should have killed him.
Almost did.
Almost doesn't count.
These people confuse sex and aggression. They can't differentiate between the two.
At 11:30 p.m. in Los Angeles, Roy and Bo met Angie Baker.
Come back to my apartment.
She was 29.
Give her 2 seconds a day. Girls like that want to give us 18 years a day.
Lisa Fisher and Rich Wilder were both 19.
This is my game, sucker.
Like if I had a 38 right now, I could make you do just about anything I wanted to.
It's in the look. It's in the touch. It's in the eyes. It's the latest style in madness.
Everybody's got a gun these days. They're more popular than sex.
What are you doing, you crazy son?
Day by day, they're changing the face of America.
A lot of people out there.
And they're barely old enough to vote.
It's you and me up here.
watching him.
The Boys Next Door, starring Maxwell Caulfield and Charlie Sheen. From acclaimed filmmaker Penelope Spheeris, a motion picture, and a warning. The Boys Next Door, rated R.
That's right, 1985's The Boys Next Door, brought to you by See's Candies. When you need a place to have a heart-to-heart with your best friend to discuss the ramifications of your murder-filled road trip, look no further than See's Candies. There's no better place to admit that the first couple of deaths were fine, but there has to be a limit, than surrounded by the smell of rich, smooth chocolate, a sweet tradition since 1921. We do ask that you have your altercation outside of our store, and preferably don't shatter our windows with bullets. Follow those rules, and you'll seize that there's no better place to talk through your serial killing differences than the outside of See's Candies.
But really, those lollipops are delicious.
Yeah. If it were open and they just could have gone in and gotten a free sample, who knows what would have changed this whole movie.
Could have changed if they'd just shown up an hour earlier.
Just a little low blood sugar was all that was. This is directed by...
Is that what it was? Roy was just having low blood sugar that whole trip? Just
needed a chocolate. That's what he needed.
Yikes.
Okay. And this is directed by Penelope Spheeris, her third feature after The Decline of Western Civilization Part 1, and Suburbia, which was her narrative feature debut, which was also released by New World Pictures when Corman still owned the company. In fact, Spheeris openly admits in the commentary for The Boys Next Door that she came from the, quote, Corman School of Filmmaking. So,
as okay. One does.
Corman's graduates, just hint, hint. All right, she she admitted to the Philadelphia Inquirer in 1985 that this was not going to be another teenage sex comedy. She said, I could never do that. It's like if someone said, okay, Penelope, tomorrow you have to go skiing. I can't ski, and I don't want to ski, so I can't do those kinds of movies, and I don't want to. I wouldn't know how. So don't hire her to do Wayne's World.
And all of the other very successful films.
Yeah, exactly.
So she learned to ski, is what you're saying.
She essentially did eventually learn to ski.
Okay.
Though she does do some films after this that are definitely not in at all in their vein. And, like, Dudes is definitely not, like, a teenage sex comedy. Like, she definitely spends time not making these kinds of movies and then does, and she finds huge success. So, all right. This is written by a couple of guys who met at El Cajon High.
You mean a couple
James
of boys?
James Wong.
This is where the comedy starts.
A couple of boys. Written just
by a couple
next
of boys.
Door.
Just a couple of boys.
I was about to say, where do they live? I was curious. I had not heard.
We're talking about James Wong and Glenn Morgan. The duo started out as PAs for producer Sandy Howard. The duo started out as PAs for producer Sandy Howard, which before they wrote this script, in fact, they started pitching different ideas for Sandy Howard and eventually got to write this script. They would then move on and become writers for TV and 21 Jump Street and Booker and eventually The X-Files. And together they would write Final Destination, which Wong also directed.
Okay.
But this is their starting point. Yes.
Okay, all right. It's funny. I'm not surprised to hear you say that this was written by two dudes.
Yep.
If you were like, this was written by two older women who were retired, I'd be like, what? can we go right to research? I don't understand what's happening.
Yeah, what I do think is interesting also, not to mention their like resumes, but also the fact that they're from El Cajon, which is like very East County San Diego. And so a lot of the like...
That's why LA was like a destination to them. That's why Hollywood was a destination.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it does inform the movie in a weird way because the way they look at Los Angeles and the fact that they consider that they, and we'll get into this in a little bit in the movie, but they seem to think that they're from way outside.
Get into it now or I'm going to kill you. Get into it now. Your life is on the line.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. This movie had such a positive impact on my confidence. I walk around all the time and in weird situations, I just take off my shirt. And then if things aren't going the way I think they should, I just murder. So, I don't know.
It is, that is one way to go about life.
Thank you, fans.
Which sounds a lot like, sounds a lot like Roy, which is played by Maxwell Caulfield, who is fresh from the bomb that was Grease 2.
Excuse me? How did you... Da bomb? Like D-A-B-O-M-B? I agree.
I only mentioned it as a bomb because it did sink his career at that time. He did Grease 2 and had a 3-picture deal with Paramount. And as soon as the movie came out and it did not find success initially, it really sunk his career and he was struggling to find work. In fact, this was a movie that, you know, sort of brought him back. Though at the time, he was also in the Dynasty spinoff, The Colbys. So he was finding work on TV, but this was finally for him a big role that he was able to really, in his eyes, he was really trying to show off his range as an actor and try to show what else he could do outside of Grease 2, since that really made it difficult for him to find work.
I think they should have went with the original title of Grease as well.
Grease also was the shooting script.
That probably would have done it. That would have changed everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of somebody who was denied success, Charlie Sheen plays Bo. At this point in time, his biggest claim to fame was Red Dawn. And also his famous actor father, Martin Sheen, and his famous actor brother, Emilio Estevez. In fact, it was Emilio around this time who was going to appear in Oliver Stone's Platoon around the time that they made this. But production for that film was halted and placed on hold for about a year, allowing Charlie to appear in this and Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Performances, all of which were shown to Oliver Stone, once funding returned for Platoon, and he decided that he would hire Charlie Sheen because Emilio was now otherwise busy and unable to star in the movie. Fun
what,
fact.
What was he? What was Emilio working on at this time that had him so busy? Was he
his accent work?
I guess you could. Was Young Guns around this time?
I think Young Guns is later. I'm trying to think. This is like, isn't this when he's making Wisdom? That's like his directorial debut.
Are you guys asking me? I'm not here to provide research. I don't.
I'm trying to just go off the dome. So my guess is that it's I'm guessing that's what he was doing at that time. Here's where you can watch The Boys Next Door at the time of this recording. It is on Tubi.
Tubi.
And it is on a Severin Blu-ray, which is how we watch this, though now you can watch it in delightful 4K, as Ryan has. Ryan's done the upgrade. So you can watch it in 4K and also on Blu-ray.
There's certain scenes I would definitely want to watch in 4K. And maybe, you know.
You can hear a lot of slurs with better visual quality.
Oh, oh my.
Oh, exactly what I was hoping for.
Really makes all those epithets pop. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But now it's time to talk about what this movie is about. Mark, what is The Boys Next Door about?
You know, finding a parking space in LA is hard.
Oh my god, yeah.
Don't take two spaces.
Don't take two spaces.
Don't take two spaces. That is a real dick move. Don't do it. Okay? That's what this movie is about.
Yep. You will pay a price.
You will pay in many ways.
So will other people, but that's separate.
Well, everyone hurts when you take two spaces.
That's true.
But,
that's true.
You know, sometimes that finger turns around and points at yourself. Okay?
Oh, that's right. Erica, what is this movie about?
This movie is about two things. The first thing is that when you're hot, you can literally get away with murder. Audio wink for those of you who have seen this, but that is
interesting
the theme,
that you think
right?
He gets away with it, but we'll get there.
He gets away with it.
Did you get to see the end of the movie?
Yes.
Or is this one that you paused?
I saw the whole thing because I was just praying to God that shirt came off again a couple more times. And so Yeah, saw the whole thing. He gets away with it.
Okay.
We'll talk about it later, I guess.
And, okay. It's in a way you could see it him getting away with it in the end. You mm-hmm. you could see it in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would just like to get a little better definition on getting away with it.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, he never had handcuffs right. on.
Yeah.
Never.
He never had handcuffs never on. Got, so he never got read his Miranda rights. By the police. Never.
He never has to pay a legal penalty.
Nope.
Nope.
Or legal price nope. for never. At the end. Yes, nope. I agree with yeah. that.
Nope.
Doesn't have to get his car out of the impound lot no. and pay all those fees.
Doesn't. No.
So,
no.
Mm-mm.
So maybe you're right. He does get away with it.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad this... I didn't know this was a Convince Me episode, but done. Easy. See? Beautiful people can get away with anything.
What was the other thing you thought this movie was about?
That, Grease 2 needed more shirtlessness. It needed more Maxwell Caulfield shirtlessness. Right. And that probably yeah. would have saved it. Probably would have saved
yeah,
it.
Yeah, the producers of Grease 2 watched this and went, Damn it.
Damn it. Why right did we give him a shirt and a jacket?
It was in front of us
jacket.
The entire time.
Foolish.
Yep. Ryan, what is this movie about?
This movie is about how palindromes are the definition of cool. And now I hate to kind of take this and run with this for a minute. However, okay. but I have my top five favorite palindromes. And this is not in any way a political statement. However, number five here is, was it a car or a cat I saw? That is a palindrome. Was it a car or a cat I saw? The next one, rise to vote, sir. That's a palindrome. Rise to vote, sir. Third, damn it, I'm mad. One of the best of all time. Number four, a Toyota. That is somehow a palindrome. And then, of course, the best palindrome of all time, noon. Not only is it a great palindrome, you flip it upside down, and it's still the same word. Noon.
Wow.
Mm.
Wow.
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 Show's wow. over, guys. We did it.
Yeah,
great
it.
Job. We all came together.
That.
I don't know. How do we go beyond that?
How do they have a 3-minute rant about palindromes like 8 minutes into this movie?
Know.
It's so great.
I don't know. It is great. For me, this movie is about, you know, just because you commit a few random murders, it doesn't mean you stop your pursuit of getting laid. You know what I mean? Like, you got to stay focused. You got to stay focused.
I know we're not at final questions. But I need to know, do you guys identify more with Roy or with Bo? Are you a Roy or a Bo?
Real tough choice on that one, to be honest. But
I'm going to jump in and say Bo. Because
he's a dog lover.
Many times, yeah, a dog lover for one, yeah. Likes a good Budweiser or 10.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a few friends growing up that were a little more inclined to get a little wild, a little wilder than I was willing to get.
As your younger brother, I'm backing you up.
And the thing that frustrated me about this movie is I'm like, Bo, fucking walk away. Walk
yeah.
away. This
walk
is
away,
nothing
dude.
But trouble.
Yeah.
And what frustrated me more is I saw myself in Bo and went, I didn't walk away either. I was just like, boy, this is messed up. Well, what do we do next? And
yeah.
as frustrating as it was because I don't understand Bo's motivation, only made me question my youth more. Anyway, I'm going to therapy after this, and I think
like a 24-hour
unlock
therapy?
Some things. I think this movie is going to help me unlock some things, so I'm really excited about that. So, you know, will this be on my top five? Maybe we'll see.
This did have a very positive effect, Mark. This movie. And let's talk about the Letterboxd synopsis. So we are on Letterboxd, and so are you, Ryan.
I am, yeah. Under Disconnected and Antenna for Films. You can follow our new company on Letterboxd.
Nice.
There you go. Nice. So follow all of those accounts if you dare on Letterboxd. Here's the synopsis.
Follow them or I'm going to fucking murder you. I might just shake you to death. Favorite scenes? I don't know. We'll wait and see.
Spoilers.
We'll wait and see.
Jumping ahead.
I'm just saying,
okay, Roy,
if the shirt would have been off, would you let him shake you to death? Perhaps. I don't know.
Oh, boy.
Well, all the while, he's like, eyes up. My eyes are up here.
Okay.
My eyes are up here.
He does walk into other people's places and immediately pops his shirt. So,
I mean, oh.
No hesitation.
No, it just is like, I'm in your house, so I'm just going to pop my shirt. Which I'm
I wish
like,
I
okay.
was that confident.
Choice. Right. Roy and Bo leave their small town the weekend after graduation for a short road trip to L.A. Soon they find themselves lashing out and leaving a trail of bodies behind them. The violence escalates throughout.
Oh, that's it?
That's
I was waiting for eight more sentences.
I feel like that last sentence could have been workshopped a little bit, but I mean, that is basically it.
The violence escalates throughout. Oh.
It's like somebody was watching this movie for the first half hour and they were like, cool, cool. And they wrote the first sentence and then they watched the end and they were like, I don't know. It just gets more and more violent. I don't know.
And he gets away with it.
I don't know. I don't know. And he gets away with it. In a way. Now, this movie starts with, I think, something we should talk about, which is that it starts with this indication that this isn't going to be a fun romp through Los Angeles with Charlie Sheen and Maxwell Caulfield, as it shows pictures of infamous serial killers from history, and it's a sequence that actually they added after the whole thing was shot. They weren't originally intending for this part, but it really does set a tone, doesn't it?
I think they added that after because this was originally going to be a Grease 3 script.
Grease again also.
Grease for the last time.
It's a bummer that they cut the songs out. This is like...
Seriously, I could have used the songs. Yes.
Yeah. Like that James L. Brooks movie, you know, I'll Do Anything, and they just cut all the songs out. It's like... Again, the songs were written by Prince. There's a lot of similarities. Then they add that, and then we meet Roy and Bo, and they are just a couple of pranksters at their high school. We all probably knew or were pranksters at our high school. They're tracing a body outside the entrance of the high school, which I'm not sure would do much as a prank. Does that accomplish much?
They made it a good prank because after that, they made a fart sound.
Yeah,
right. It really draws a crowd, which I'm like, I could imagine walking to high school and seeing that and being like, all right, like there's no police tape, there's no, like, you're just like, okay, whatever, and they just like keep walking, but it seems to draw a crowd. I didn't understand why.
Who's the victim of the prank?
It feels like they are, because everyone's like, no one's buying this. And they're like, this is hilarious! And it's like, no, not really.
I was also fixated on the fact that they drew Bo's body, and then by the time they got there in the morning, the chalk outline had lost 80 pounds.
It shrunk
I was like,
down.
What happened?
It shrunk down to a child size. I was like, that's not the same one.
A child died at the high school? What happened here?
Was there a light rain that night when they were drawing it? And then the moon just kind of condensed it? I don't know. But it's interesting in this movie is that the first opening 15, 20 minutes of the movie is like kind of a setup of your typical high school movie. It's like Charlie Sheen as Bo is like obsessed with this girl named Bonnie. And they're like graduating and they're talking about how lame high school is. And I'm like, okay. And it's also interesting that our two leads are basically outsiders at their school, which is a weird thing to accept when you have Maxwell Caulfield looking like Maxwell Caulfield.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was like, damn, where are the other boys at the school? Uh-oh. Yeah, that's going to sound really weird, right. Taking that out of context.
Please clip it.
Yikes.
This audit is going very well.
Oh, no. You can't continue to do your show, guys, but I have informed the authorities, so it's gonna be a little tricky.
But it's okay, you get away with it.
Yeah.
In the end.
Okay, Mark, you relate to Bo, just murder me outside of See's Candy. Let's go. Come on.
Originally, actually, instead of Maxwell Caulfield, Nick Cage was going to play the role. But he turned it down, and it was a move he later admitted to Penelope Spheeris that he regretted.
Because he read the script, and it was, walks in room, takes off shirt. Walks in another room, takes off shirt. Walks in another room, takes off shirt.
No.
Jumps in a pool, pees in pool. I know we're not at final questions, but do you think he really peed in that pool?
Three times.
Yeah.
Method
did
acting.
He really peed? Did he really pee in there?
We didn't get the shot. Do it again.
Give me that Gatorade. Give me that. I got to drink it quick.
But I think the casting of Nick Cage kind of makes sense, and that if it's Nick Cage, and I don't think they had Charlie Sheen yet, but if it was those two, it would kind of make sense as them being outsiders. Maxwell Caulfield feels like a little bit like we got to get into it a little bit to see, like, why is this guy an outcast? This guy looks like he should have been, like, the captain of the football team or something, or just at least just being celebrated by the school for being, like, a pretty hot dude, but he's not. Everybody thinks they're super lame. In fact, they're not even accepted by Moon Unit Zappa here in clip one.
I found out the party's at Joe's house after the ceremony. His parents are going to San Diego.
What time?
What time what?
What time at Joe's?
It's invitation only.
Well, how do you get to Joe's?
Take a hint.
Take a hint, dude. That is Moon Unit Zappa and I think her film debut. And if you're Frank Zappa's daughter and she's rejecting you, yikes. You know what I mean? Like, where are you going to go from there? If you're too weird for her, damn. My real question, though, is where does this take place? The parents that are leave the house open, or they're going down to San Diego. So this feels like, oh, we're in L.A. The high school is Reseda High School, which is in the Valley. And it looks like it's a Valley High School for anyone that lives in the Valley. They
1,000%.
It looks exactly like it. So you're like, okay, we're in L.A. But then there's a line later in the movie, an ADR line, where they talk about Roy and Bo and say, go back to the Valley. And yet, then when they're talking about somewhere to go, they say the drive to L.A. is 6 hours? And the alternative things that they mention are Las Vegas or Phoenix. LA is 6 hours. Like,
I mean, to be fair, sometimes from the Valley it does take 6 hours to get to Hollywood. It's like, are you taking server streets? Is there an accident on the hill? Like, come on, Ryan.
Is it during the Rose Bowl?
Yeah, come on.
Yeah, and you're coming and you're going out towards Pasadena and then back in.
Ryan, you're pissing me off and you were just two more comments away from murder. Ryan, not our boss. Ryan, my husband and co-host. Close to murder. And I'll get away with it because I'm hot.
So, question though, if the argument is they are from the Valley, I've never lived in the Valley, but I've been there many times. Do people from the Valley go to Hollywood and act like they came from Ottumwa, Iowa to Hollywood? And they're like, wait, you have to pay first for gas? What's going on in this town?
Yeah. Yeah. Because everything in the Valley is better. Yeah.
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 You can pump first in the Valley.
Yeah. You can do whatever you want in the Valley. All right.
You just got to give the Valley nod and then everybody goes, go ahead and, go ahead. You know, and you'll get $6 worth of gas for $2. That's the Valley. It. That's the Valley way.
Wow. Wow. They're just giving away gas in the Valley.
So we don't know where they're from. No guesses.
We don't know.
Sacramento is a fine guess. I don't, again, LA is not 6 hours away from Sacramento.
This sounds like something you should work out
really far
on the SemantiCast.
This is not a semantic argument. This is a SemantiCast bonus episode where we talk about maps.
Nearly, it's a nearly SemantiCast.
It's the MapCast where and our next episode, it's what great cities are a six-hour drive from Los Angeles. So
from Hollywood.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway,
where can you take you?
They do crash the party, and that's where we start seeing that maybe something is very wrong with Roy as he sits and drinks by himself. In fact, once Roy and Bo decide they're going to head to Los Angeles, Roy basically admits that, you know what? Things aren't going so well inside of Roy.
I want to tell you something. I never told anyone. I
I got stuff inside of me.
What do you think, like cancer or something?
I don't know. You remember Christmas? That guy smashing in your car and taking off. You could do nothing about it.
I was so pissed off, man. I wanted to kill that guy.
That's how I feel all the time.
Hey, come on, man. You're righteously pissed off. Hell, you're like a lot of people.
I thought the Marines would get it out of my system.
All you're gonna get out of the Marines is a bad haircut. You know?
Two things. One, when you hear Roy laugh, you're like, okay, no, now I get why he's been ostracized.
Now he's
an outsider. I get it now. Hot or no, that's a really lame laugh, dude.
I don't know. People put up with my laugh, and I'm pretty hot, so.
The other thing is, at this point, you cancel the road trip, right? I mean, like, this is, you're like, we shouldn't do this. Let's go back. you're in a dark place, dude. Let's turn around, head back.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the long-term plan was with that dog?
Ransom?
I'm worried about the long and short term. Were they intending to feed it at any time?
Seize candy.
It's perfect for dogs. They love chocolate. It's perfect for them. Nothing goes wrong when they eat it.
Historically, great choice.
I think the fact that they leave the dog almost instantly was the fact that they had no plans for that dog. They just grabbed it and they had no idea what to do with it. We also never know what happens to the dog. A girl like picks it up and looks at its collar and then, I don't know, I guess we're supposed to presume that it gets back home safely? We don't know.
Maybe.
6 hours away.
Yeah. Six hours away from home. To wherever it was.
Could be Mammoth Lakes. I'm just saying that's one place they could be coming from.
Oh,
that was so specific.
Wow. Okay.
Mark's back on the cartography cast.
The map that's cast. Right. It's the map cast.
Topographical of the morning to you.
that's how they start every episode, those geniuses.
I gotta write that one down.
That's adorable. That's a good one.
They do make it to LA, and I guess they don't live in the valley because they keep mentioning Hollywood and getting there, and that's exactly where they're driving. So they're like, we should go to Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And then it cuts to them driving down Sunset. It's like, you're in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. You're there. You made it.
Yeah.
Then they go as far as West Hollywood near CBS. And that's when they pull over to a gas station and beat the hell out of the attendant over $2 worth of gas. And that really made me think, maybe I should drive over to CBS more often, because a gallon and a half of gas for $2 could be worth it.
Mm-hmm.
That is worth it.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. For LA, that's really good.
Worth the drive.
Can we roll a clip from the semantic cast? Because it was actually over $4 of gas, Ryan.
Because after you beat up a gas attendant and leave him for dead, the first thing you need to do is grab a lot of gum.
Exactly. And now it's twice as much justification for a beating. So
a gum that, by the way, you never see them chew. They don't chew.
Or put anywhere.
They do nothing with the gum.
No.
They also don't eat.
Roy chews the gum in the hotel room when he's doing this on the bed.
That's true.
The poster. Yep. He's doing the poster move. No, I've clocked all the times where he's chewing the gum in that. That's the new titty count.
Considering we just saw you pose, I think we know what you clocked.
Yeah, that's what I clocked. That's why I need the 4K. I need the 4K for that scene to just make sure everything's, you know, legit.
You need the 4K and then just those little bits and then you're done.
Yeah.
It's a very quick watch.
Yeah,
it's
and like then I'm going to return minutes. It. I'm going to return it back to Rye Busters. There's two Rye Busters now.
Semantic cast, Ryan, it's 4 minutes, not 2 minutes.
Okay. Oh, God, the 4K really does expand. The 4K really does to a number.
That's why it's 4Ks, yes.
That's right. I will note here that we spoke to Mark Sjostrom, who did the makeup effects for this movie. Woo! He told us that there were more prosthetics planned for that scene at the gas station, but they ran out of time and he didn't have time to apply it because it was at the end of the day, which is an issue he ran into very often during that shoot. That said, I don't think it needed to be any more graphic than it was. This is where I think it's interesting, going back to the fact that there are these outcasts. I think it's interesting that Bo and Roy are not punk rockers. Because I think if they were punk rockers, that would sort of explain a little bit more about who they are. And I think the fact that they are not punk rockers kind of makes you feel like, you're just like, what is going on with these guys? Because they look normal.
Like the boys,
like
next
the
door.
Boys next door. Mm-hmm. Exactly, Mark. There exactly.
Go. There we go.
Exactly.
Sorry for stepping on you there.
No. We were just thinking the same thing. It was great. It was just brotherdom coming together.
Took you such a long time to come to that. Really, you want to fucking just shake you to death. Just get to the point. I'm gonna shake you to death. So just know that right now, I'm gonna go have some gum and I'm gonna cool off.
This is the weirdest ASMR.
Okay, enter our two cops. One is played by Hank Garrett of Steel and Lace. And, okay, Car 54, where are you? But but also, Steel and Lace. Come on. That Blu-ray that Vinegar Syndrome cannot even seem to give away.
Oh, seriously. I don't know how many copies I have to buy. I love that movie.
Love that movie.
Jeez, people can't get that movie.
I don't get it. Anyway, also, Shooter McGavin himself, Christopher McDonald, who is also in Grease 2. But this
as well.
This, and actually, as it happens, he was also Grease again. Also, this film. And I thought, is this where Shooter thought better of being a police detective and decided to become a professional golfer? Is this a part of the Shooter McGavin verse? He basically admits it to his partner here in clip 3.
Sometimes it just gets to me. Report says the neighbors heard 3 shots, so 2 boys, one called the other Bo. They drove away in a gray car. The bullet passed through the girl and lodged in the back seat.
38?
Yeah.
Well, what do we do now?
We got the APB. Nothing to add to it. We got no license, no last name.
Which boils down to, we're not going to learn anything new until they do it again.
Calm down, Mark.
I can't calm down. It's the fucking problem, Hanley. Everybody calms down. Everybody accepts it. I feel so fucking useless.
That sounds like a guy who's ready to quit his job and hit the links.
What they cut from that scene is like, you need to take some time off. Maybe go play some golf. Yeah. I heard it's really good. Mm. Good for your body, good for your mind. Mm-hmm. And then he was off to the races.
Is that in the bonus scenes? Like the
gotta be.
On the extra?
Has
the
to
extras?
Be. Has to be. It has to be. It's
he
in the
also
4K.
He also takes his shirt off, but to much less effect.
You can keep that on. Nobody wanted to try. Nobody on that set even wanted to try. It could have been 1,000 degrees outside and everybody would have been like, every dude on there would have been like, I'm fine, I'm cool, I'm good. Just soaked in sweat, completely pitted out. Hey man, you want to take your shirt off and cool off? Nope. No, I don't. No, I sure don't.
Yeah, but in a different field, Shooter McGavin, he is a golf 9. You know what I mean? Like, he would take that shirt off and
that's
people
fair.
Would be like, damn, hold on
that's
a minute.
Fair.
Hold on
that's
a minute.
Fair.
Who's this guy? You know? Mm-hmm.
9-iron was right there. You didn't go for it. So I'm proud of you, buddy.
Thank you. So we're skipping by going to that monologue. We're skipping over a good deal of damage that they've done. They hit an old lady with a beer bottle in Venice Beach. That's when they get the dog, or leave the dog.
Mm-hmm.
There's a scene where they go to the gay bar, and then they go back to the apartment of one of the patrons, and then they beat him up and shoot him with his own gun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this actually led me to one of the special features on the disc is Stephen Thrower talking about the movie. And he basically said it was a movie that he watched with his friends a whole lot and made them think that this is a movie about Roy's character being gay himself, being unable to admit it, and sort of maybe even being in love with Beau a little bit and not being able to sort of just repressing that part of himself. And I was like, it's a damn good theory, man. It's a damn good theory. I don't know if I could totally disprove it.
I thought absolutely that was the case.
Yeah, right. Like I mean, it's like
I don't even think it's very subtle. I think I mean outside of him saying like no, but I love you. Like,
well, here's the thing though. I was waiting and then listening to the commentary. I was waiting for Penelope Spheeris or even Maxwell Caulfield to like again say like yeah, this. Well, of course he's gay, and I was just waiting for that theory to present itself. They never talk about it. And I'm like, wow, that it feels like you're, why aren't you bringing it up? Because this is like hearing them talk about it. I'm like, yeah, that's a huge part of this movie. Right. I mean, and they never discuss it. So I'm like, did they realize it?
I mean, I guess they could be just trying to leave that up to the viewer and they don't want to say anything that way.
Maybe
it can appeal to any audience and you can make your own draw your own conclusion as to whether that is the case or not.
Or if we ever get to ask her, and she's just like, "Yeah, of course that's the case, idiot. We don't need to talk about this."
It's right there, bro. I'm gonna spell it out for you. Enjoy the movie, you idiot.
Did you hear how many times we use the F slur? Of course that's true. Come on.
We also, but one of their biggest murders, of course, was at the La Brea Tar Pits, where they just killed time. And which is what you do there.
Oh my God! Audio eye roll.
I mean, I remember when I was 19, and I would take those drives from San Diego up to L.A., go to Hollywood. First thing we do is go to La Brea Tar Pits. I mean, that's what every kid wants to do.
Yeah,
just go and check out the tar pits.
In many ways, is that the cause of this carnage? I mean, that they were like this. I'm so bored. LA is lame. We need to kill people to just spice this weekend up. And also, of course, before Shooter McGavin breaks down, that's when he found a girl at an arcade, and because killing a guy in his home with his own gun was not enough to stop Charlie from being horny.
Too easy.
Horny, still horny.
I hadn't thought about it that way, Ryan. Yeah. To be like, well, I'm still wrestling with the fact that we just shot and murdered someone right. in their own
we killed
apartment,
somebody in cold and yet, blood, and he's like, ooh, roughly chicken necks arcade, ooh. Okay. All right. You know, stay on point, I guess. And then they shoot her and her boyfriend, who she had her boyfriend the entire time. He gets really pissed off, like, damn it, he kind of moved in on me. Like, no, you moved in on him. That was him. That was his girlfriend. He was out with her the whole time. You just, like, caught her eye and thought that you could, you know. Anyway, they, of course, then die. And then we get to another bar, and they are bounced out finally for being underage. But not first before getting the attention of Patti Darbinville, who began her career in Andy Warhol projects like Flesh and was also in films like Big Wednesday and Modern Problems. At the time, she was dating Don Johnson and had just had a son with him. And she also would appear in Real Genius the same year, 1985. She was also the only other actor to appear on the poster. So she was the biggest name, I guess, in the whole film. No surprise, she brings the guys back to her apartment because that's just a thing that happens wherever you go in L.A., I guess.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, she wanted another beer. It didn't seem like she wasn't going to get it from the bar, her favorite bar, her watering hole, her local watering hole. So this was a chance to get a couple more drinks and, you know, maybe get a little smoochy-smoochy time.
By the way, that scene in her apartment, that is one of the scenes that the MPAA really made Spheeris cut down. So they cut down that sequence considerably. And it does feel a little unclear that her neck snaps, I guess, and just being shaken. It feels like what happened? But a lot of the parts of the movie in the violence was they would make her take out all the audio. So sometimes they would just play a song, but all the audio of the violence they would take out or cut down the violence in order to get an R rating. Which is interesting. They didn't have them cut out the sex scene. They didn't. None of that stuff had to go. Mm-hmm. Just the violent shaking. Interesting.
The MPAA fucking sucks. I know it's a hot take. I'll say that, but what?
I don't know. It's weird. The cops are finally on their tail, and so the teens head where else? The mall, specifically the Fox Hills Mall, now called Westfield Culver City, and we've already kind of spoiled this ending, but we're going to get to the end, and this is where you should end every disagreement, and that's outside See's Candies, the sponsor. In the commentary, Spherious recalls that it was a difficult ending to figure out, as there was a lot of debate over who was truly at fault. Mark, you sort of spoke
about I thought you were going to say they didn't know if they wanted to film in front of the Chess King or Tom McCann.
Right.
And they're like, God, where is the most meaningful store to shoot this scene in front of? Okay, mm-hmm. Never mind.
And KB Toys declined.
As they always did.
Oh, man. Okay, well, we're stomping on one of my final questions. But anyway...
Now, right? I'm gonna fucking kill the boss. What the fuck,
you motherfuckers? No. Who do you think is at fault here, though? I mean, do you think it is? We sort of mentioned this earlier. Erica sort of asked us who you really felt you were more like, but who do you think is really more at fault here? Is Roy the problem or is Bo the problem?
Are we talking physically, or... Because I have no problems. I have no issues with Roy. No notes.
You know what's funny is that in the commentary, several times Penelope Spheeris will talk about how good-looking Maxwell Caulfield is in the movie, which is also a little like, okay, all right. But I don't mean physically, though I guess their physicality has played a part in murdering people. But who do you think is more involved in terms of their murderous rampage?
Oh, Bo.
Is this really a question? What?
I feel like this needs to be asked in the form of a Cosmo quiz. Are you one of Bo's Bo's or Roy's Boys?
That's the quote. That's the episode quote.
Well, I know how Erica would answer that question, Ryan.
I'm a Roy boy.
Yeah, because I feel like Mark sort of mentioned it. Like, the biggest problem in this movie is Bo. Yes. Bo is allowing this. Yeah. Not only does he take part sometimes, I don't think he does any of the actual murdering, but he takes part in it. He never stops Roy. Did he? Point of order,
at the end, he did something. I mean, he
yes.
Well,
yes.
And actually, Ryan, to your point of order, he does stop Roy
exactly
at the end.
And even admits, I had to.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. And yeah. I'm glad you brought that up, because weirdly, on the back of this promotional poster that I have behind me, which is for an early version of the film when it was called Blind Rage, they go through the whole plot on the back, and it goes, and there's a slightly different end line. They say this.
It just says violence escalates throughout.
That's it. It's one paragraph. It's very quick. It's a lot of empty space on the back. They're like, shouldn't we promote this harder? We're good. People love violence. No, at the end, they said there's a different line. It says, quote, when Bo is asked if he also killed the four others that night, he answers, no, they killed us.
Oh, boy.
Oh, Bo.
Oh, Bo.
Oh, Bo.
Oh, Bo. Interesting. So, I don't know. Was that cut? I don't know. Is that before they had the final cut? I don't know. Interesting.
Yeah, that sounds like a test audience saw that and went, fuck that. Come on now. Come on. That's fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
Erica?
Yes?
Every time. Every time. Oh. Every time.
I thought you were waiting for me to weigh in on the bow comment. I was like, I don't know. I've got nothing to add to that. But I do have something to add about a little fan favorite. I think you know it. Sing it with me if you do. It's things you fucking love and things you fucking hate.
Oh, we're going to talk about the things we love and the things we hated about The Boys Next Door. Mark, what did you love?
I loved that this movie introduced to me my new favorite character in a movie. And that is old people who gawk at crime scenes.
Mm-hmm. That old man partners with Johnny Glitter? I don't know.
They're not anywhere to be found during the crime, but they are the first to be there to just stand around and stare when the cops come around. Mm-hmm. They might have a totally bullshit racist story that they want to share with you, but they're there. Ask them a question or don't. They're there.
You know what? It's very real that they'd be like, anyone want to talk to the police? Old man goes, I'll talk to the police. I'll talk to literally anyone who will listen to me for any length of time.
What about John Wayne? Who knows?
I don't know. Wait till I get rolling. We'll see. I'm going to find out in a second. As soon as I start opening my mouth, stuff's going to fall out. Ryan, what did you love?
An oddly genuine response here. The
what?
Moment where
on
Charlie,
this podcast?
I know.
How
I know.
Weird.
And that's it, everybody. Thank you. Good night. This is not the honest, genuine response cast.
By the way, I'm one of Roy's boys. Have a good one.
Yes. Okay, you can stay. You can stay.
The moment that Charlie Sheen picks up the gun in this movie, I have to say, I feel like it's the best acting he did in his entire career, maybe. Like, the actual fear in his eyes when he realizes he's actually holding a gun, I feel like for a moment he almost walked away and then went, fuck, Roy is so hot.
Yeah.
You know what's so funny? Ryan, I said something similar to Ryan. Didn't I, Ryan? When we were watching this, I was like, is this Charlie Sheen's best acting?
Yeah.
You
know, is this Ryan?
Yeah.
Is this Ryan's best acting?
Yes.
You did say that this like was very you were very impressed with Charlie Sheen in this. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think he is pretty good, damn good in this.
Yeah.
Erica, what did you love?
Oh,
I think we have an idea.
Thanks for asking. I loved the shirtless scenes. I think that's obvious. But I liked seeing all of Hollywood. I like to see how much it hasn't changed, and then I like to try to slow it down or pause it to see which street it was exactly, to see if I could try to like figure out exactly where they were. I was convinced when they were doing the high school scenes that it was the high school that's up the street from where we live, and it isn't. It's not far. It's probably about 30 minutes from where we live, or 6 hours. I'm not sure.
I was about to say.
Valley time, so who knows? So
if you have 6 hours, you could make it to Big Sur, by the way. Ooh. Just want to point that out.
Yeah. You really think the guys are in the mountains?
I like seeing all the old LA, old Hollywood.
Yeah,
old,
there's
old
definitely
Valley.
Some old cool. Hollywood scenery porn for you that enjoy that. And I like that as well. I really thought, honestly, the thing I love about this is just the performances. I think this is, we've already mentioned it, the acting in this, I think, is very good. And as much as we've given some love to Charlie Sheen, I think Maxwell Caulfield is really good in this. Like, he is really, if this movie had been given any amount of release by New World, if they had backed this thing at all, I think, it should have turned his career around, because this is really very, very good. It's a dark movie, but he's great in it. Let's switch to things we hated. Mark, what did you hate?
I hated that Roy boy just sucks at pole position. I was like, dude.
Yeah, dude.
Dude, turn
the
just a little
one.
To the right.
He's in the
little to the right. That's the,
come on,
that's
man.
The best one.
Yeah.
You can do this. Come on, man. Just felt like a half-assed effort.
I feel like the dude in Dawn of the Dead did better when the old version of Pulp Fiction, yes, when he's like half zombie.
Yeah, you know? Like, agreed.
Come on, Roy boy.
What a deep Ryan,
what
cut.
Did you hate?
The inconsistencies with the characters. There was a moment of weakness when they were just flying around with the woman on, like duct taped to the hood of the car, and they just kindly let her off right in front of her friends instead of 3 miles away, which they definitely would have if this was a real story.
That's a good call out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like that was budgetary too, because they had the stunt woman like in the parking lot. They're like, we can't drive anywhere else with her on there because that opens up a whole new amount of cost and everything else.
Penelope on the walkie-talkie, yes, you have 18 feet to do a J-turn, and that is it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, that goes to me. Things I hated. It's hard to say what I hated about the movie. They did seem to... This is something Mark can appreciate. They did seem to fire the gun a lot, mm-hmm, considering it didn't seem to take other bullets.
They did show when they picked up the gun, there were a couple extra bullets in the box.
In the drawer, but...
But you're right. I also didn't see them reload, so...
Yeah, yeah. Also, they're at the mall, and why do they just go to one end of the mall and they never go anywhere else?
Well, that was where the hot dog on a stick was. And, you know, when you could get that cheese on a stick, which I want to point out was American cheese, America's favorite cheese. to get that molten hot wrapped in cornbread, there was nothing better as a kid, right? Am I right, everyone? Am I right?
Please? Great lemonade. Great lemonade.
We need to wrap this up soon. Mark's hungry.
Starving. He's got to eat before he goes to 24-hour therapy.
Let's go to our favorite scene.
Oh, I don't think we're ready to go to favorite scenes yet, Ryan. It's all you try to skip me on things we hated. Nice try. One more notch in the murder corner.
Oh my god, sorry.
There was only...
How many notches does a murder take? Just curious.
It fluctuates.
At least 6 hours drive.
6 hours worth. There's only one thing that I hated in this movie, and it was the detective's eyebrows. Where were his eyebrows? What's the story? What was happening? How did he have bright reddish brown hair and zero eyebrows? Was he powdering them? Did they fall out? Were they blonde? I was pissed off about it, and I just needed to be known. I needed to go down on record.
You know what? Alopecia doesn't just hit the top part of your head.
It can only hit the eyebrows?
It can affect just the eyebrows. It can. Yeah, and like different patchiness with your beard, but yeah.
Don't make me feel bad about not knowing this.
Well, let's make us all feel bad. We just did What Do We Hate, and none of us said homophobia, so.
That's true.
Well, yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's as...
Can I change my answer? Yeah.
But I mean... That's as obvious as the actual, like, gay theme running through the whole movie.
It's true.
Like, what's the point? Obviously, we hate that part.
Yeah.
Also the murdering.
Murder of innocence.
No one deserved to be murdered in this movie.
Yeah. But really, though, like,
except
I don't want to harp
for
on
one
it.
Person.
I don't want to keep harping on it. It's going to make me sound shallow. But, like, he's a Hollywood detective. Where are those eyebrows? Come on. Yeah. Come on.
I have to go with the alopecia theory on that one.
Oh, damn it.
He's
Mark,
got no eyebrows and no
That's
pubes.
A notch for you, Mark.
He is pube free. That's the one thing. Now let's move on to our favorite scene. Mark, what was your favorite scene?
My favorite scene is the high school party scene before all the murdering takes place for a couple of reasons. One, when Roy Boy gets out of the pool, evidently he was wearing a Hypercolor shirt because the bottom part is purple and the top is white. And I was like, what happened to Hypercolor? Kind of to have that one
the
back.
The dye from his pee just soaked up in the shirt.
Yeah. they had those discs in the pool.
No,
like,
the pool goes purple because he pees in it.
I guess I must have missed that.
Yeah, because she says that his dad put a special chemical in the pool. It's my
favorite.
Which
was always a mess.
It's my favorite. Right. That's what I was going to say. That's my favorite scene, too, because I love that they had that. And it actually exists in a movie because that was something that everybody talked about. Like, oh yeah, pee in the pool and it's gonna make a, it's gonna come out of color or whatever. And his, he says like, if you pee, it's gonna be purple. And so he pees and he sort of points down to it, but he's like, all this purple is coming up, and then that's why his shirt is part purple. But I'm like, that's a myth, right? That does, that camel, that, that doesn't actually,
it doesn't exist. But I honestly must have gotten up right as that happened in the movie to like get something, because I came back and I was like, why is his shirt purple? Like, I said, like, that doesn't make any sense. But
you're like, he's in the pool, let me grab some Kleenex. Anyway, Ryan, what
wait, hold on, but I didn't get
just,
to my...
just to explain, Mark, his shirt has a chemical on it. When you pee on his shirt, it turns purple.
Right. I did have to clean up. That's that explains it. But the other thing, really, really quickly, is that you have this party of just like, you know, your general American high school kids who've all decided, like, for this party, we're just going to listen to the Cramps. And I was like, that's a pretty dope party.
Yeah, it is a good party. Yeah. She plays like two Cramps songs during.
Yeah. Like, we're not playing a mix. I'm just playing the Cramps all night long.
Yeah. Definitely a Penelope Spheeris move, because she mentions it in the commentary. That's definitely her choice. Ryan, what was your favorite scene?
Oh man, let's see. I'm debating between where they are showing Charlie Sheen trying to get guns out, but they are so tight up against this that he can only move them about 4 feet in each direction and somehow not pick them up. So that was funny. And then the other scene where they make Shooter McGavin look super cool, and he says, "Guns are more popular than sex." as an icebreaker, it really worked there at the end.
Yeah, yeah, those are good. Those are good scenes. Erica, your favorite scene?
My favorite scene is when they're in, I guess, like the precinct, or they're in the, I guess that's what it's called, right, Mark? It's not, if it's just jail.
Are you
or
talking about where
prison,
the police are? Okay,
where
yes.
The police no, are. Where the police are.
The precinct. Okay. Yeah.
Yep. That's what's called a precinct. Sure.
Okay. They're in the precinct and they're having a fight about tacos. they're having a fight about like the case or whatever, and it just ends with like, "These tacos are cold." Like, they're mad the guy that brought them tacos. Like, it's so, I was like, what? And then it ends with him, a shot of him being like the tacos are cold. And I'm like, what is happening right now? Like, there are murderers out there and they're like fighting each other.
Are you supposed to solve them over a cold taco?
They're pissed off that their tacos are cold, all the while ignoring the fact he spent the last 10 minutes talking about 14-year-olds in fishnets and short skirts.
Going
and they're not
on
like, hey, Carl?
Yeah. You okay?
Why are these tacos cold? Can we talk about
what
this?
What have you been doing, my man?
Can we get the old odometer reading on your car?
All right, let's move on to our final questions.
Ooh.
Our final questions for the boys next door. Is Bo a typical derivative of Bob?
I think they explained that it was Bop, right?
I mean, is that where Bo comes from? I just never, like, I've heard the name, like, let me just say, I don't think I've met someone named Bo, especially B-O, but I've met B.O. I've met it on my person a lot, but a person named Bo that is spelled B.O. I've never, where does that come, that's a nickname of what? Like,
it's short for Bomathy.
So wait, the actress in 10 was Bomathy Derrick. Is that what I'm supposed to believe? Yeah.
Named after her grandfather. Family name.
Bomathy the third. Sorry, Bomathy again. Or also again.
Bomathy Derrick also.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it.
Roy's dad, we meet him only briefly. Now, is he a piece of shit father or just a guy who wants to watch his stories in peace?
Yeah, just wants to watch his stories in peace. Just finish packing your paper bag with your clothes and get out of here. My show was on.
Yeah, but your sweater that you never put on, that paper bag.
Yeah. And I know we are at final questions, but where's the rest of that luggage? Never puts that sweater on.
No clean undies, bro. Come on, man.
Yeah.
Oof. Okay. So this was a question that we stomped on a little bit throughout the episode, but I want to see how well you remember the shops in the mall.
Mm.
So true or false, were these shops in the mall? Number one, International Gifts.
I'm going to say no.
No, it is not in the mall.
Wrong.
Lady Foot Locker.
No.
I'm going to say yes on that one.
I feel like yes.
Yes, it was in the mall.
Damn.
Chess King, we already mentioned it. Chess King.
Yeah, Chess King yes. was there. Mm-hmm.
Was in the mall, you bet. B. Dalton.
No.
There was a bookstore, but I don't yeah. think it was a B. Dalton.
No B. Dalton.
No B. Dalton.
Action Survival Center.
Yes.
yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Everyone, we all went there.
Yeah.
Woolworths.
I don't think so.
I don't think so. I don't remember a Woolworths in there.
No, it's a big Mako.
Mm.
Foxmoor.
Sure. I'll. Yeah, why not?
I don't remember that one.
It's the Fox Hills Mall, so I'll go with it.
There is a Foxmoor. Foxmoor Casuals, it's also called, or was called.
Okay.
Tinderbox.
Pretzels. I'm sorry.
I didn't see a Tinderbox. If there was a Tinderbox, I would have seen it.
Anyone else see the Tinderbox?
Or, I did not. Or,
no.
And there is a Tinderbox.
There is? Oh, the, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
I'm ashamed.
Yeah,
my 16-year-old self is so mad at me.
Sam Goody's.
Oh, yeah, there was definitely a Sam Goody's in there.
I don't remember seeing the Sam Goody. I remember the Radio Shack, but I don't remember the Sam
Goody's. No Sam Goody's. There was a Radio Shack. No Sam Goody's.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Erica with the extra credit. Nice.
Red Eye. Was there a Red Eye?
Uh-uh.
I don't know.
No.
I'm going to say
yes,
no.
There was.
There was?
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Damn. Right at the bottom right-hand corner. Like 17 years later.
It was based on the store. It's just intellectual property. Hancock Fabrics.
That's such a peculiar name that I'll say yes.
I think there was.
I'm going to say no just to be different and wrong, but also I love that you have 18 of these prepared.
Yeah, dude. We're almost at the end. It's actually false. There's a Singer House of Fabrics
that
was in the mall.
Okay.
Lastly, and we mentioned this already, KB.
No.
I don't remember seeing one.
There is no KB.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I didn't think so, but...
Okay. Then, last question here. Penelope Spheeris told the LA Times in August 1984, she talks about making this movie, and she says it's about two kids who kill people, apparently for no reason. They appear to be average kids, but there are reasons that are built into the society that enable superficially normal people to go out and commit violent acts. I'm trying to point those reasons out. Did she point those reasons out?
Yeah, I think so. They get alienated at school. They, you know, I think some are more subtle than others, but yeah.
And one of them has a dad who's ready for him to move on.
Not ready. He believes he has moved on. In his mind, he has moved on. Yeah.
He's checked out.
And are they alienated at school, or have they alienated the school? Because I feel like...
Don't make them make a fart sound.
There's like a 50-50 on that.
Yeah. But we don't ever see Beau's family. Like, we see him go home to his home, and he has the card from his grandparent who lives in Arizona, but we don't ever see his family.
He's given $200 for graduating from high school. So he's given a very like, hey, you're gonna go somewhere in your life. You've got a lot of potential, and it's like, I mean, seems like he's got a much more positive upbringing than Roy does. But I don't know. I don't know if we get to see the reasons. Anyway, speaking of this though, was this the beginning of serial killer exploitation?
I think based on the intro, yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Because this is a year before Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Mm-hmm.
Also a year before Manhunter. We start really getting into serial killer movies. And I'm not saying there weren't ones beforehand, or certainly that there weren't any in the 70s, but I'm just like, it seems like we had this fascination with serial killers. And it kind of maybe seems like this is one. This is on the forefront of it.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Without the intro, maybe I would disagree. But the fact that they added that on there, yeah, it feels like they're actually leaning into it.
Yeah. All right, let's get into some research. This is shot in August 1984 on a budget, apparently,
$5 million. Probably should have saved this one for that, you know?
Yeah, this comedy. Fans might have
made a little mistake.
This was apparently a budget of $5 million, according to the AFI.
Wow.
That's pretty good.
A couple people went home with a couple million bucks in their pocket.
Yeah. And only $2 for gas.
This originally was titled Killers, though with Max Caulfield says
that's what makes it scary.
It was fun. It makes it fun.
Killers.
Maxwell Caulfield says in the commentary it was titled originally Killers Holiday when they were shooting it. Obviously, well, and also
Royce
then,
Boys.
And then Royce Boys. And then they went with Blind Rage, and then they went Boys
also
Next
with
Door.
A Z.
Yeah.
Royce Boys. Both has Z's. Roy's
Two Z's.
Boys.
Two Z's.
Double Z's. We're all Roy's boys here.
I don't know. Mark's a Bobro?
A Bozbo?
Oh, what was it? Bobro?
Bozbos.
Bozbos.
Bobos.
Bomathies, Jomathies. Never mind.
This basically plays a whole lot of festivals. It played the Montreal Film Festival in August 1985 and also played the Chicago International Film Festival. And then it opens in a few territories starting on November 1st, 1985 in Texas, Maryland, Virginia. Also, weirdly, London. And then in December 1985, it moves to Kentucky and Ohio and towards the West Coast. At the top of 1986, opening in L.A. in March 1986. It also opened in New York and Boston at that same time. But very limited release. Like, they just sort of slowly moved it to a few different territories. And so much so that by this time, Spheeris' next film, Hollywood Vice Squad, was also opening in 1986.
Jeez.
And it already opened. It was released by Corman's Concord Pictures. So,
nearly
New World, wink. While Boys Next Door was still slowly, it's still, like, trickling into different territories, Hollywood Vice Squad is out there. Said Walker Art Center director Bruce Jenkins, when it played at a festival in Minneapolis in February 1986, he said, quote, "I don't think New World Pictures knows what to do with it, and I think you're right." Here's what they did know they were going to do with it. They were going to put it out on New World Video, which they were having a great deal of success with when they started it in 1985. And that's why Boys Next Door is released in April 1986. Think about this. It's still opening throughout the country. And they're like, it's on video now. So, didn't play near you? No problem. You can rent it. New World Video put out a bunch of movies in April of 1986, including The Annihilators. Cost? $80.
Oh, jeez.
Chiefs.
$72 too expensive.
Chiefs is a TV miniseries that they put out on video. Also, $80.
Just took my drink over.
Grunt, the wrestling movie. $70.
Worth every penny. That one. That's worth it.
The Horrors of Burke and Hare, which was a movie, an older movie, and that is $60. And of course, The Boys Next Door, $80.
Wow.
Yeah.
$80.
So while it's going out on video, it's also still being shown around the country at drive-ins through the summer of 1986 in a lot of New World doubles. So they would pair the movie with movies like No Retreat, No Surrender, Knights of the City, and Mountaintop Motel Massacre.
Oh, wow.
I'm so glad you brought me back for this.
Yep. Had to go full circle, Ryan, that you were also on that episode, and you also were here for The Boys Next Door, and that is it. That Yay. Is The Boys Next Door. Ryan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, boss.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on for a good movie. I appreciate it.
Was it weird? Was it weird being like, this movie is pretty good?
I mean, this is genuinely a movie I've championed for a long time now, and so it's interesting to be able to talk about it in a sense that is not, hey, Mount Top Motel Massacre, there's no research out there on this movie. Let's just kind of riff for 7 hours. Hey. That's all we did, too. We didn't decry homophobia or anything, so that's fun.
We actually decried a lot of homophobia and Mountaintop Motel Massacre. That's when we really talked about
that's
it.
That's true. That yeah. is so true.
We don't want to talk
so
about
go back
it
and listen to that episode.
You're here, you know? It just seems like that's all we talk about.
Make it a new world double and put both of those episodes on.
I would say Mountaintop Motel Massacre and Keeping Track. Those would be the two that you should...
Yeah, you really check out those episodes, you know?
When did Boys Next Door premiere 6 hours from Los Angeles? I'd like to know that one.
Well, I know that you could make it to Flagstaff in 6 hours, so maybe that makes sense.
Maybe Flagstaff is what they're thinking. But then they're like really down on Phoenix, and I'm like, I don't know, I guess.
Who isn't?
I know. I guess they're like, we live in the cool town in Arizona.
Like literally, like temperature-wise, it is the cool town.
Yeah, cooler. Yeah, temperature.
Yeah, this is the semantic cast, so thank you, Mark.
Thank you. Oh, it is. This is an actual semantic cast episode. Oh, my God. I wasn't prepared.
Oh, you're always prepared for semantics. Ryan, thank you again for joining us. Where can people find you, and where can they learn more about the things you're doing?
People can find me probably sitting working at my laptop and learn more about what I'm doing. That was a dumb joke. You can find me on social media under The Disconnected or Antenna Releasing everywhere on all of your social media apps except for Truth Social because there's nothing true there. And then you can find us on Letterboxd under Antenna for Films and hopefully in theaters near you soon.
Yes, woo! Antenna Releasing. So woo! Excited. So excited to be a part of the Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network. That's where you Yay. Can listen to our episodes. Also on our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. And that's where you can find all of our episodes, our interviews, our t-shirts, articles. It's all there. One-stop shop. Buy a t-shirt, support the show, or give us a 5-star review. Wherever you listen to your podcast, we'll see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast. Bye, everybody.